sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam, the Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latines and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 283 of Café con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Rick Sanchez. Rick is an author, producer, news correspondent, and TV news host with more than 30 years of experience with CNN, Fox News, NBC News, Univision, and iHeartRadio. He is the first ever U.S. Latino with his own namesake and highly rated show on national television, Rick List on CNN. Rick is an Emmy Award-winning journalist and has been part of three Peabody Award-winning teams and an Alfred A. DuPont, which is among the most coveted awards in journalism. Rick also anchored CNN's award-winning coverage of Hurricane Katrina, NBC's award-winning coverage of the 9/11 attack, was awarded Florida Broadcaster of the Year for his coverage of Hurricane Andrew, and has interviewed four U.S. presidents, as well as Russian President Mikhail Gorbachev, Cuban President Fidel Castro, and Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega from behind bars. Listeners, this conversation was super fun, actually, because as you heard, Rick Sanchez is a pro. It's a super pro. And I actually was on his show not too long ago, and it was very different because him as a journalist and an anchor, the way that his podcast is very different from Café con Pam. And so I had a lot of fun asking questions, being me, really, because I can't be anyone else. Café con Pam is supported by First Republic Bank. At First Republic, everyone gets a personal banker who's ready to sit down and answer your questions, no matter how complex. And did you know that First Republic's commitment to extraordinary service extends beyond its clients? First Republic is committed to strengthening the communities it serves. Learn more at firstrepublic.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And even with someone with such experience, I think, I don't know, it felt like we actually had a great conversation. And after we talked, one of Rick's team members messaged us. So they said, this is one of the finest interviews he's seen. And he noticed that Rick was noticeably touched by my questions. So, I mean, you know, I'm going to give myself credit there, because having interviewed someone with such accolades and accomplishments and like experience, frankly, it's really nice when you get a compliment on your work. And so I say that because I want to model to you to also take the flowers when someone gives them to you and own them, because you are also really good at whatever you are. And so I didn't want to dismiss the compliments that I received from my work and continue to receive from my work. And if you feel some type of way about me doing this, I invite you to check, what is it? What is activating in you that you might feel like, ay, mira, esta que se cree, que se cree? Because, of course, my comment is not coming from a place of boasting at all, but more so from a place of confidence and stepping in my power, which is what I want for all of us. Pero bueno, otra vez, this conversation with Rick was super fun. We talked about a lot of things, about his life, about him coming from Cuba, about assimilating. We talked about his name, and it's fascinating how, I mean, he's older than me, and he shares how things were different and how he was the only Latino in school, or maybe one of the very, very, very few in school. And so there were a lot of things that pushed him into this assimilation to change his name from Ricardo Sanchez to Rick Sanchez. And so that all of that was really interesting to converse and to, in a way, like think back about all the things that older generations have gone through and the roads that they have paved as they have spent more and more time in this country that we call home. Y bueno, yeah, I know you're like, okay, just bring it. So, sin más, aquí está my conversation with Rick Sanchez. Rick Sanchez, welcome to Café con Pam.
It's so nice to be here with you, Pam.
Yeah. How are you? How are things? Where are you tuning in from?
South Florida. We're in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, nice.
We're on a ranch just outside Fort Lauderdale with lots of horses and stuff running around.
Oh, that's fun. And Rick, the question that we always ask is, what is your heritage?
I'm a Latino, born in a place called Guanabacoa, Cuba. And I came to the United States when I was about 2 years old with my parents. And we settled in a barrio of South Florida that's called Hialeah. First, we lived in something that's often referred to as a ghetto. It's called Overtown. It's a part of South Florida that has become a very inner city neighborhood. And then we moved into Hialeah, which is a Latino enclave or barrio, where about 90% of the people are Latinos and come from other countries. That's where we came to.
Was it just you, or were you the oldest and then more siblings came?
No, my mom and dad were able to get out of the country on one of the freedom flights that was taking place at the time. We snuck into the airport and were able to get on a flight when everybody was trying to leave the country. It was in the midst of a revolution that was taking place in Cuba at the time. I came with my mom and dad, but my brother, who was a bit older, the government seized him and told my parents that he was not allowed to leave because he was still, I guess, of use to the government. So the Catholic Church came in and put him on something called the Peter Pan flights, which I'm sure your listeners will read or probably have heard of. It was one of the most amazing things that's ever happened in this country, where the Catholic Church under the Archdiocese smuggled small children out of Cuba during that revolution and sent them around the United States, where they lived frighteningly without their parents in a convent in some place. My brother was sent to a convent in Tucson, Arizona, until my mother and my father could be in the country long enough to collect enough pesos to be able to take a train to go get him and bring him back to South Florida where he could live with us. But he was by himself as a small child, maybe 5 or 6, for almost a year and a half. So it was very frightening. And interestingly enough, I'll add this to this story because I think people will find this interesting. You know, this is emblematic of the hardships that we Latinos and many immigrants go through when they come to the United States. When my mom finally had enough money to get to a train depot to go pick up my brother Rudy and bring him back. On the way to the train depot, we lived in a kind of an inner city area. It was kind of rough. She walked there because it was just blocks away, and she was mugged and they took all her money away. And she sat there kneeling at the bus depot or train depot, crying and wondering what she was going to do. And I remember this story's always been with us in our family. Knowing what had happened, the folks there at the train station kind of all chipped in and put their pennies together, and they discounted it so she could still go ahead and make the trip to go get my brother, even though she didn't have any money. So she took a train from Miami to Tucson, Arizona, got my brother, brought him back, and then finally we were a family once again.
Wow. What a story. How did she come back? Did she ask for help again?
By then she had, you know, family members wire something to her so that she can be able to pay for the trip back. She stayed there for a little while at the convent with my brother until she did so. So she was gone for quite some time. And you can only imagine, I mean, a train ride across the country, and she obviously spoke no English. So it was a brazen act, you know, an act of courage. And that's what our parents do for us when they bring us to this place.
Totally. Do you remember having conversations about, why is my brother far? What's happening?
I remember missing him. I remember it was a strange time. We were living in this something we called La Casa de Cucarachas, the cockroach house. The cockroach house was a place in Overtown. It's all we could afford. And there were strange animals always roaming around in the attic. I think they were raccoons, but at the time, I just thought they were like really monsters. So the whole experience was very, very frightening. And I remember every night listening to my mom crying because she missed my brother so much. And it kind of always made me feel like helpless, because I felt like I wasn't enough. And I was all she had, and I wasn't enough. And to be honest with you, it always made me feel a little bit insecure. And when I've spoken to people who've helped me, and when I've had difficult times in my life, when I've sat down and talked to therapists, for example, they've always pointed to that moment in my life and said, this is why you're a crazy type A personality. This is why you have imposter syndrome. This is why you're so insecure. This is also why you're so successful, because you've spent your entire life trying to prove to your mother that you are as good as your brother. And I think I just misread it, Pam. I think I was just a little kid and I wasn't getting my mother's love because all my mother did was sit around crying and thinking of my brother. So my first 2 years in this country was that experience, feeling lonely and feeling like I wasn't the loved one. My brother was. So, you know, it's funny. It's something that kind of stuck with me. And you know what's weird? Even after my brother came back, I always felt like my mother felt horrible for what had happened to him. So she predominated her affection and attention toward him. Not that I didn't get love of my parents. My parents love me and I know they love me, but there was always this thing where Rudy, because she felt so guilty that she had abandoned him. And to this day, my mom, who's now old and has memory issues and stuff, but when you talk to her about the things that matter in her life, she always goes back to that story and says, I know my son Rudy had a hard life because of what I did to him. I let him, I abandoned him when he needed me most, when, you know, the revolution took hold. By the way, just to broaden that out a little bit, my brother was not the only Peter Pan child. There were thousands and thousands of them. Movies have been written about it and books have been written, and you'll find articles written about it. But being in the midst of that was actually quite an experience for us. And even for me, even though I'm not a Peter Pan child, but I live the Peter Pan experience.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Thank you for sharing. Have you had a conversation with your brother about it?
Yeah, we talked a couple of times. He just passed, so.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we know. To be honest with you, no. We never had a real heartfelt conversation. You know, because I happen to be male, I am part of a species that doesn't like to take apart emotional issues or emotional topics with other men. So, to a fault. Thinking back on your question, I almost wish I had.
Oh, you can write him a letter.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think sometimes we think back through those times in our life, and my mother has this thinking that something happened to him while he was there. And by the way, total conjecture, but whenever she would say, I think somehow sometimes I see he's anxious or nervous, or he was an incredibly successful person, by the way. He ran a nuclear power plant, so he was a total brain when it comes to mathematical equations and stuff. Ate calculus and trigonometry for lunch. I can barely, you know, balance my checkbook. So we are very different in that way. I turned out to be a writer. He turned out to go to be a great engineer. But he was very successful. But my mother always said, well, whatever troubles he's had, it's always because something happened. And who knows? But it's a delicate subject.
For sure. For sure. So your brother comes back. You are settled in Florida. What is it like to arrive into this country? And I mean, you were two, so did you assimilate pretty quickly?
Well, no, it was difficult. We finally were able to leave La Casa de Cucarachas, which is next to downtown Miami in an area which many people refer to as one of the ghettos of Miami. As horrible as that sounds, I know, but it's the word that's used. We were able to move to Hialeah. First, we live in what was essentially a tenement with many, many other immigrants all kind of piled up together. And that was interesting because I was a kid and I didn't know, and it allowed me to have a lot of friends. But yeah, we were very, 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 very poor. No money. And eating refugee meat, which is standard stuff that the government back then used to give refugees when they first came to the country. But when I finally got to the age of 5 or 6 and I was ready to go to school, I was enrolled at Mayim Walters Elementary School, where my first grade teacher, Miss McIlvain, I guess because I was one of the first Latinos immigrants to come to that area. She didn't realize I was an immigrant and I had speaking problems because I didn't speak English. I didn't know how to speak English, not a word, because obviously my mom and dad never spoke English to me. My mom and dad have never spoken English. So she failed me and I failed first grade. And she wrote on my transcript that Ricardo has learning deficiency issues and is quite likely mentally retarded. And she actually wrote mentally retarded on the transcript, a word that today we don't even use. She was so convinced that I had this problem, which then made my mother freak out and start trying to figure out what she could do. In the end, I had no learning deficiencies and I was not mentally retarded. Well, you know, I am a little weird sometimes, but that's at least what my kids and my wife says, but that's for other reasons. But I remember it was a very tough slog and she was so incredibly wrong. I went on to win every award that that school had to offer. From back then, it was called the JAC Award, Junior American Citizen Award, the American Legion Award, most likely to succeed, highest grades in the school, you know, best athlete, all those things that, and I only say those, I was a kid, I was in sixth grade at the time when you graduate from elementary school, but it was the complete opposite of everything this woman, Ms. McIlvain, had said about me, it turned out to be. So, and once again, maybe there's a lesson there. And I've learned this in my life many times. Every time you fall, you trip, you have a tough time, every time you fail, every time you're accused of not being capable, it usually spurs you to double down and do 2-3 times better than what you normally would have done if that hadn't happened. I tell people all the time, based on my life anyway, if you haven't fallen recently, find somebody and tell them to knock you down, because it's in the getting up that you grow and you stretch and you become better.
I love that, because I don't know if everyone's built that way, though. With that resiliency to say, ese fue mi impulso to get back up. Because many times when people fail, it's like, yeah, no funcionó, it wasn't for me. You know, then they get into the depths of the despair instead of using that as fuel. So what really went into my mind, into your mind as a sixth grader?
I have to tell you, I think this is a quality that all human beings have. I think it's more predominant in immigrants because they have self-selected already to make a sacrifice. They are risk takers in and of itself, by definition. If you are in another country and you say, I want to improve my lot and I'm willing to do whatever it takes, I will cross a border, I will risk starvation, I will get on a raft, I will almost die, I will start over, I will leave everything I have behind, even if it's a new car and a new house and a business, because I'm willing to start over. That person who has already self-selected will come and meet difficult obstacles and will be more likely to overcome them. And that, as speaking as a Latino, and this is not exclusive to us, but I will say our track record in this country as Latinos is pretty darn good when it comes to restarting, overcoming obstacles, remaking ourselves, stretching ourselves, which I think is, you know, that perseverance is one of the best, most wonderful attributes that we can have as human beings.
For sure. Did you ever feel like giving up during that time when you were young?
Yeah, I've felt like giving up a lot of times in my life, but I've never felt like it's really a true option. Here's the answer to that, as I see it. Anytime you want to achieve anything in your life, you have to, first of all, give yourself a reason to achieve it. If it's just achieve for achieve's sake, it means absolutely nothing. So your reason has to be something bigger than yourself. It has to be your mother, as it was my case as a child. As I got older, it's my wife and my kids. I can't fail them. I can't let them down. So when CNN fires me and says, you're never going to work again and nobody will hire you, you know you have 4 children and they have to eat. You know you have a house that you could lose and you're going to have to find a place to live. All of these things, I owe it to my wife, I owe it to my children to remake myself even perhaps better than where we were or better than what I had. So whenever you are convinced in your life that you want to reach a new goal, make that goal about something bigger than you.
When did Ricardo become Rick?
When I turned 18 and I became a citizen of the United States of America. Back then, when you came from Cuba as an immigrant, you had to wait until you became 18 so you could legally become a citizen of the United States. So when I became 18, I raised my hand and take the oath to declare myself a citizen of the United States. And in the process, I wanted to be Americanized because I didn't want to be a Latino. I wanted to be American kid. So, you know, I was wearing the jeans and the Hawaiian shirts and all that stuff. And trying to do my hair like a gringo and stuff. So in that moment, I changed my name from Ricardo to Richard. And I've been called Rick ever since.
And how do you feel about that assimilation that happened now?
You know, it's funny. Something weird about us who came earlier. I've noticed that I came from Cuba when I was 2-3 years old. I didn't speak English. So I had to learn English. And now most people who hear me speak English have no idea that I'm also perfectly fluent in Spanish. So I speak Spanish as well as I speak English, and your English is perfect. My English is perfect. But I know friends of mine and maybe friends of yours who came after, and they speak English with a Spanish accent, which is kind of bizarre. And I guess the reason for that is they grew up in an enclave where all their buddies spoke Spanish or broken English, so that's the English they learned. I came, and all my friends were not Hispanic because there weren't any. I was one of the only ones who was around. So it's kind of like the theory about if you want to learn to swim, you got to jump in the ocean and just do it and not do it little by little. Well, that's kind of the thing. I was completely immersed in the English language as soon as I came to the United States. And it took me a while to understand it, and probably it took Miss McElvain a while to understand it. But once I got immersed and I started swimming, eventually I would do the backstroke as well, and I became perfectly fluent in English. Whereas even my younger brother, who was born here, speaks with a little bit of a, you know, like a little bit of a Spanish accent you can detect. So I think immersion has a lot to do with that. Yeah.
For sure. And I also, to your point of your story of, you did it because for your mom, and you did it because, you know, when that teacher said that you didn't make the cut, I did it because I didn't want people to make fun of me the way that my cousins would make fun of my mom with her accent. So I learned English when I was 20 years old, 19. So I should speak with a very thick accent.
You don't. Your English is flawless.
Because my thing, my internalized assimilation was I need to sound the whitest I can so that people don't treat me badly.
Right.
Like I wish I had an accent. I have friends that have accents and I'm like, you sound so cool because like right. There's this like, I don't know, where are you from? I think maybe they didn't internalize that so much. You know, everyone internalizes like something as they come into this country. There's something that happens that it affects them in some way. In my case, it was English.
And that balance is really interesting, right? I mean, for you and for me, the balance of I want to be an American because I love this country and I want to be American. And then somewhere along the line, you tussle with, I want to be Latino and I'm proud of being Latino and I don't want to lose Latino. And then you go back to, but I'm an American and I want to be American. And it's like we spend our lives going through these two thought processes. And in the end, I think that's what makes us so interesting as part of the new American mainstream, as we like to call it here at Agua Media and on Rick Sanchez News.
Yes. Okay, so let's take a quick coffee break and then we'll come back.
Sabrosura pa ti que que.
Rick, do you drink coffee?
I love coffee. In fact, I didn't have enough this morning.
How do you drink your coffee?
I like a little bit of cream. I have American coffee. I've stopped doing for a while there, I was really into the robust, overdone.
The Cubano.
No, café au lait and the cappuccinos. I would wake up and want to have a cappuccino. And, you know, I realized there's a lot of sugar in that stuff. And so what I do now is my special coffee, you know, the cappuccino, you know, with flavors and lavender and all that stuff. I save that for the weekend. And it's like my treat. On Sunday morning, I make myself, I put whipped cream and I put the caramel on it. And I am just doing it up. The rest of the week, I take it black with just a little bit of cream. And usually I have a cup and a half. And by then, I'm ready to go.
Nice. Do you have a place, a favorite local coffee shop that you visit?
That coffee is a very Latino thing, for us especially. And if you grow up in Florida or in many other places in the United States, you'll realize Latinos have been drinking and making everything that Starbucks does for one-tenth the price. And they've been doing it for years and decades. So I grew up as a little boy, and with my mom or my dad, or with my uncle or with my brother, we would go to El Kiosquito. A kiosco is essentially, for those of you who don't know, a small little store outside of a store. So it's like you would go to the grocery store or the supermarket, el supermercado, and then on the outside of the supermercado, there's a window where they open that window and it's to the outside. It's not in the store and they make coffee and they sell pastelitos. So you have a coffee and a pastel and everybody on their way to work stops there and gets it. We invented Starbucks before Starbucks existed. Before America discovered coffee shops, real coffee shops like Starbucks, these were all over, for example, where I grew up in South Florida and in Tampa and in parts of Florida, they're everywhere. So every other block, there was a kiosquito where they sold café cubano, cortaditos, and all kinds of combinations of coffees with a little pastel. And that was basically our breakfast. And then Starbucks came along and said, hey, we're going to steal that idea, but we're going to charge $20 for that coffee or whatever it is they charge. So there you go. It's a fascinating story, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. So you had your black coffee today with a little bit of creamer.
Yes.
I have black coffee today. I had this little, kick of powdered milk in my coffee, but it's not creamer. Mm. It's actually powdered whole milk. And sadly, se acabó ayer. So today, I'm back to black. And it's delicious. I love my black coffee. I'm a black coffee drinker. But when I had that can of powdered milk, it was like, oh, the thing.
So have you had Cuban coffee?
Yes. So one of my really, really good friends in college, she's Cuban American from Florida, and she would make me Cuban coffee. And I mean, that thing would probably keep me up for 3 days. And so Cuban coffee for me is not like an everyday thing, but I love it when I have it.
Yeah. We amicably refer to it down here as actually cocaine. So, you know, for somebody who's never had Cuban coffee, the first time they have Cuban coffee, if they go a little, and that's the thing, when you grow up as a Cuban, you know that you're supposed to have this much.
Poquito,
I'm putting my fingers together. Yeah, it's a little thimble. But a lot of people come to Florida and they don't know that. So the whole coffee experience for us as Latinos in general is a social thing. So it's incumbent upon you to go to a kiosco and they give you a cup this big, which is like an American cup of coffee. You're not supposed to drink that. You're supposed to share it. So then they give you 5 or 6 symbols, and whoever's around you, you offer it to them and you engage in conversation. That's part of our tradition. So you get a big cup like this. They give you 5 thimbles, and then you look at the people around you, go here, and you just automatically pour it for them and they drink it. And that's part of our culture. Well, there's a lot of people who don't know that culture come to South Florida, people coming from other parts of the country. They go to a kiosco, which is like our Starbucks. You order one of those and they drink the whole thing down by themselves, yep. Right? And it's this much. And you watch them, and most people there are going like, uh-oh. Does he know what he just did or what she just did? And it happens all the time. But, you know, it's like the guy who goes to a sushi restaurant and pops the wasabi, thinking it's sushi.
Avocado.
And it's like, oh, no. And suddenly they're running to the bathroom to throw up or something. So, yeah, cultures are funny. You better know what the culture is before you start imbibing.
For sure. Ask questions, you know. Ask questions to the locals. Why not?
Exactly.
You're not up for 3 days, for sure. Okay. Let's get back to the show. Hola, Vanis. By the way, if you are enjoying this conversation and you want to keep talking about it, if you have some comments and maybe some questions that you have, follow me on social media and let's keep that conversation going. This is your reminder to screenshot and tag me at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And let's keep talking about it. Tell me what's resonating. Tell me what isn't. Tell me what do you wish I asked the guest. This is your chance. And if you're on TikTok, I'm at Café con Pan Pod as well. Let's stay connected. So, Rick, you grow up high achiever. You accomplish a ton of things. How did you decide your career?
Well, I got a football scholarship to a place called Morehead State University in Morehead, Minnesota. And when I was there, one of the professors, actually several of the professors, got together and said, you know, you've kind of been killing it as a student. You've done very well in theater, and you're also doing very well with your grades, and you're doing very well with English lit. And they said, you are a really good candidate for a scholarship that's now being offered by CBS News. And we know you like playing football and you're here on a football scholarship, but if you get this scholarship, they will send you to the University of Minnesota, the big school in Minneapolis, one of the biggest Big Ten schools, the Eric Severide School of Journalism, where you're going to be able to study journalism amongst, you know, with some of the finest professors, et cetera, et cetera. At the time, it was a big deal, especially for CBS. And all you have to do is apply and do this. You're going to be competing with about 2,000 other kids from all over the United States, but we're going to recommend you and help you in any way if we can. They did. I applied and I was chosen. And suddenly I realized that although I liked football, I wasn't not going to play in the NFL. I wasn't big enough or fast enough. And I'd already broken a lot of bones. So I got that scholarship. And I went and started under the auspices of CBS News. I became one of the few, if not the first, Latinos to graduate with a degree in broadcast journalism from one of the finest schools in the United States. My parents could never have afforded that, so I basically went to school for free. Graduated and applied for jobs, and lo and behold, people at the time realized there are no Latinos in news. None. Zero. All the people, when you turned on your TV to watch local news, were white dudes. All of them. There were some women, but very few. There were a spattering of African Americans, but very few. No Asians and no Latinos at all. So I became the first Latino to come to South Florida and report the news. I soon moved up the ranks and I became the noon anchor, then the 6 o'clock anchor, then the 10 o'clock anchor. And then after I won Emmys and I won a bunch of awards, and then NBC came and said, interestingly enough, it's a long story behind this, but I won't bore you with it. But the long and the short of it is NBC came, snapped me up and took me national. And I became a national correspondent for NBC, an anchor for MSNBC. And then I went on to become the very first ever Latino primetime anchor with a namesake show on CNN. The show was called Rick's List. My podcast, this podcast I do, is called Rick Sanchez News. We thought about taking Rick's List, but apparently there were legalities involved. So we're going with Rick Sanchez News. But yeah, that's it. That's pretty much how I got to be part of the national conversation, as I like to say, working as the first Latino anchor on CNN.
And what happened?
They fired me because I was just not good looking enough. And they were very much, just kidding. No, I was doing an interview. I was very frustrated. And there's a lot to it. I think part of it is I was kind of believing my own hype. And I'd just written a book. I had the best ratings at the network. And time again, like many of us who are Latinos, CNN had said to me, you are a ratings monster. And we need you to go to New York and lift the ratings because we're getting rid of the 8 o'clock anchor because he or she did not work out. And we're going to put you in their place. And all you need to do is raise the ratings because Fox is beating us and we need to beat them. So they put me there. They let go of Paula Zahn and they put me on her show at 8 p.m. on CNN. And the ratings went straight up when I did it. And I thought they were going to give me the show, but they didn't. They said, okay, go back to the minors, Mr. Latino. And that kind of made me mad. So they hired another person to replace Paula Zahn, not me, a non-Latino. And that person then failed. So they called me again and said, hey, Rick, we need you to go up there and raise the ratings again because we're losing to Fox News. So I did. I went up there, raised the ratings. I thought they were going to say, you got the job. And they said, nah. We're going to give it to somebody else. So they gave it to the former governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, instead of me. By the way, he had just been involved in this incredible scandal where he had to resign as governor because it was a sex scandal. Let's just leave it at that. So when they announced, we're not going to give it to you, go back to the minors and, you know, we'll call you up when we need you. I was angry. I said, you know, this is true to form of what happens in media in America. You guys treat us, you treat African Americans, Latinos, and Asians like we're minorities, and you put us in minority corner, and you let me work on weekends, and you let me work in the morning, but you won't give me a primetime slot, despite the fact that three times I've proven myself to you that I have better ratings than all of your other primetime anchors, including Anderson Cooper, including, you know, Lou Dobbs, et cetera, et cetera. And I was a little pissed off about that. And then I did an interview. And rather than controlling my emotions, I started complaining about the fact that there was a lack of diversity in the media. In the process of saying that, I also insulted Jon Stewart, who was actually a friend of mine. But I said something that was seen as being anti-Semitic, which it was wrongly worded and I mangled it. And obviously, I immediately apologized. But the ship had left. So I got fired for that. And they shut me down and made sure that I couldn't work. I mean, it was humiliating. It was so every late night comedian told jokes about me. It was hard. It was really hard. I lost my job. I lost my home. I spent a lot of time crying and wondering what had happened and not wanting my family to see me suffer. So once again, I had to remake myself. Knowing that nobody at the national level would hire me, I came to South Florida, got together with some friends who were doctors, and remade myself by getting back into the media and just working around the clock. But the one thing that really turned out great was we started a healthcare company to help Latinos and underserved people. That company did so well, and I was in charge of sales, promotions, marketing, et cetera, because it's what I knew, messaging, and using my brand, which was at the time in South Florida very respected. And won't you know that 4.5 to 5 years after we started that company, the company went public and in the process became a $4.4 billion IPO. And unbelievably, I was one of the original owners, one of the partners, one of the founders of that company. So it's quite a success story. It's almost like we said this before, but it's a common thread in my life. Every time something has happened to me, every time I have fallen, I've had to find a way to remake myself, and I've had to find a way to do something to stretch. And in that process of stretching, I grow and create something perhaps even better than what I had before.
Totally. I think it's fascinating because for the listeners, when you found yourself in this space of, I'm no longer here, where do I go next? Instead of kind of like going back to what you knew, which you did use, but it was in a different way. So it was the I don't want to use this word because it's been overused, but it was a great pivot. So it was a shift in direction into using the strengths, the wisdom, all of the things that you knew and applied it into a different industry in a way.
Yep.
Which a lot of times people have a hard time kind of like going there because they feel so stuck that it's like, I only know this. How did you figure I can make this shift and still utilize my strengths for this other thing that I've never potentially done?
I wish I could take credit for it, but I think life has to give you the push. I agree with what you just said. If I had not been fired by CNN, I would have been very comfortable anchoring the news at CNN in a wonderful $850,000, $900,000 a year gig with a nice house and a nice lake house and enjoying my wife and my kids, and nothing would have changed. I would have been doing that forever. But somehow God or some force in the universe said, no, that has to stop. And I'm going to give you an obstacle to see if you can overcome it. It's that obstacle that forced me to then have to say, well, what are my tools? I know how to write effectively. I understand branding. I understand communications. I understand marketing. I'm going to take all of these skill sets that I've developed as a television news anchor, investigative reporter, correspondent, etc., and apply them to the business world, because I've now learned a lot about the business world since I've been out here struggling for the last couple of years. And I applied that, and that's how I was able to have success. But without the impetus, without the push, without the failure, really, I'm not sure that I would have gotten to that point. But it's in all of us, every single person listening now to the sound of my voice. I assure you, it's also in you. If something happened and you had to remake yourself, you would and you could. All you have to do is refocus on your skill set, double down on those you have, and apply some that perhaps you don't. And you'll be a different person and you'll likely end up being more successful. I think we're all capable of it.
Do you have any mentors?
Yeah. I have one very important mentor who is my partner in this venture. His name is Saul Trujillo. Saul Trujillo is one of the most successful Mexican Latino businessmen in the world. And I say the world because he's the only human being who's been the CEO of three different corridors of the world as a Fortune 100 CEO. He was the CEO of what is AT&T. The CEO of the French telecom system and the Australian telecom system. So that's how successful he is. And he's taught me a lot of the lessons that I've used in life and in business. He's quite the guy. I think the other one is actually interestingly, and Saul is an older guy and, you know, he's lived a full life and he's out there now. He's one of the founders of Agua Media, along with me. He also runs Latitude, which is the most important event in all of the United States for Latino business people. And it takes place in San Diego every year. And I was just there where we did a big presentation.
No, I missed it. I was out of town.
Next year, you're not going to miss it because you're going to be with me. And then the other mentor is actually my partner in Cano Health, Marlo Hernandez, Dr. Marlo Hernandez, young guy who came here, crossed the border to the United States, is now the CEO of Cano Health. And he's just an amazing guy. He's one of those guys who's just an overachiever in so many ways. And he's kind and he's reasonable at the same time. He has a degree in business, a degree in public policy. He's a doctor, an MD, worked at the Mayo Clinic. I could go on and on about everything he's done. And he's a very successful person. And I trust my conversations with him are always fruitful.
That's awesome. So take me, how did we get to Agua Media now?
After Cano Health went public, I decided I was going to step away from Cano, in essence, except to stay as a consultant and help the CEO and do everything I could. But my day-to-day had to be something where I could give back. And giving back to me is, I have seen the power of the Latino community, but for some reason, it's not executed on from the standpoint of understanding, right? I mean, we just became the fifth largest GDP in the world. That means if Latinos in America were a country, we would be five, only behind the United States and China and Japan and Germany. And we just leapfrogged over Great Britain and Italy and Brazil. So this is the power of the Latino community. And yet, every time I turn on the TV in certain channels, I hear us criticized and begrudged. And I hear things about how we're criminals, and we're rapists, and we're taking people's jobs, and we're welfare freeloaders, and we're taking advantage of Americans, when I know the complete opposite is true about the contributions that we make to this country. We are the economic engine of this country. One very rudimentary fact, according to labor statistics of the United States, the average Latino works 42 hours a week. The average non-Latino works 33 hours a week. That in and of itself speaks volumes about who we are. And Saul and I have known this for some time, and Saul has been putting his money where his mouth is for a long time. You could argue I lost my job at CNN for constantly pushing the Latino envelope. Now that we are in this situation, now that we've got, you know, a few dollars to our names, we've decided to pool our resources and create this thing called Agua Media to create that voice for Latinos, to tell these Latino truths that are so important, and to say the things that others wish they could. That's why we founded Agua Media as a streaming network and as a podcast network. And that's why I do my podcast, Rick Sanchez News, which I'm really proud of.
It's almost like full circle, but now you own it.
Yeah. Yes, I'm full circle, but now I own it. I don't work for somebody. I work for me. And that's important to me.
You can say whatever you want.
Exactly. And I don't think they're going to let me go. And some things need to be said. Some things need to be said. I'm not going to redo one of my podcasts for you, but I will tell you that neither the Republican Party, nor Hollywood, nor the media, nor the Democratic Party understand us or give us our due. And sometimes when you live in a world where people don't recognize you, it's time to stand up and maybe recognize yourself. And that's what you're doing. And that's what I'm doing. And that's what about a lot of Latinos are doing. So I also think the sooner we unite and realize the power that we have, the more that we'll be able to help America and help ourselves.
For sure. Especially the fact that we have such buying power.
Yeah. The consumption and production of Latinos in the United States is $3.8 trillion. That is absolutely crazy. And it's important. And 80% of us are American citizens. And 95% of us under the age of 41 speak English. So there's all these misnomers about us where people think we all just crossed the border yesterday or, you know, that we're all sitting around watching telenovelas in Spanish. We're young, we're affluent, we're educated, we're successful, and we're economically viable.
We are young. That's the other one that I read recently, that as a population, we are millennial, like super young compared to other ethnicities.
I'm going to give you a number that's going to blow your mind. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
the common age of a Latino in the United States, common age, not the average, but the common age, which is statistical variation, which considers the node. The common age of a Latino in the United States is 11. The common age of a non-Latino Anglo in the United States is 58. If you're an investor, where do you think the future is?
For sure.
Duh. Right? Duh. I mean, who's going to have the jobs? Who's going to start the businesses? Who's going to do the hiring? So yeah, the future of this country is destined to be wrapped around who we are. And we don't say that because we want to take anything. In fact, we love this country and we just want to make it better.
I mean, we're starting businesses. We are consuming the goods. We are building wealth slowly because, you know, we need to figure it out. But we're making things happen. I agree. And to your point, I do think we need to come together more to say, how could we support each other's businesses? Like thinking about the being the fifth largest GDP, then why are all of the Latino businesses not rich? Why are we not buying from each other? You know?
The great thing Latinos are doing is, according to all the statistics that have now come out, Latinos as a cohort are hiring more than any other cohort in the United States. So Latinos hire more, and that's really important. Yeah, they're not Fortune 500 hires, but they're jobs. Latinos start more small businesses than any cohort in America, and Latinos hire more than any cohort in America. Those are really important stats. And like you said, yeah, it's not IBM, it's not Apple, but you know, in the case of Cano, which is our company, Cano is a completely Latino run, Latino board, Latino everything company, $4.4 billion company trading on the New York Stock Exchange. Yeah, there are some as well. Unlike, God bless Nancy Pelosi, she recently said that we need more Latinos because think of all the farmers who have fruit that need to be picked. I mean, what a ridiculous thing, but she's an older woman and maybe she doesn't understand it. Instead of saying that, what she should have said, we need more Latinos because they're going to be the doctors, the business people, the clinicians, the educators. That's what she should have said. But I get it. It's hard to see how we're represented in the media, hard to see how we're represented in Hollywood and not come away with an untrue or a bias. So that's what we have to tackle.
And that's what we are doing, what we do to spread the word. Mm-hmm. What's next for Rick Sanchez?
You know, I'm getting up in years and my wife wants me to spend some more time doing things with her. And, you know, we've got a little bit of wealth that we should be able to do something with. So I'm trying to figure out how to continue to run Agua Media, but still have a voice. And I want to do it in such a way where, and maybe this is the most important goal for me now, I want to be ubiquitous. I want to be heard. And I want to engage in conversations with all Americans. We are going through a very difficult time in this country, which is extremely dangerous for our democracy. We are all living in silos. And the folks living over here only hear what they want to hear from others, and they don't even know what the folks over here are hearing. So it's almost insane. You will hear somebody from this camp saying things that are completely contrary to what these folks are saying, but they're getting their information from completely different sources. And that happens politically, and it happens in terms of culture, and it happens in terms of foreign affairs, and it's dangerous as hell. And it has to stop. So I think in the future, we need more Pams and more Ricks to go out there and tell our stories to everyone. I want to be on Fox News and be interviewed by Tucker Carlson, which I am. And I want to be interviewed by Anderson Cooper at the same time. It's gotten to the point where the people who talk to Tucker won't talk to the people who talk to Anderson. And the people who talk about, you know, what's going on in, you know, Iran will not talk to the people who talk about what's going on in Israel. And the people talking about China will not talk to Indians. And this whole world is getting so that, what are we doing? If we don't communicate with one another, we're never going to grow and we're never going to get out of this malaise that we continue to find ourselves in. So that's, if you were to ask me what my next goal is, it's to be ubiquitous and it's to create a model that allows for more ubiquity.
How do you prioritize rest?
I start early. I get up at 6 or 6:30. I usually work my day through the afternoon. By 6 or 7, my wife and I are sitting on the couch together, either watching a movie or sharing conversation or talking about our kids or our granddaughter. And we start triggering it down. I turn off all the electric stuff put the cell phone down and put the my laptop away and try and be in bed by 9:30 or 10 o'clock. Okay. That's my routine.
So you do have boundaries.
Yes.
What are your bad habits that you are willing to work on publicly?
Wow. Wow. You would go there, wouldn't you? Good gosh. There's a bunch. But I guess my best habit is I know the importance of a routine. Nobody in this world can be successful without a routine. You have no routine, you will not be successful. That's like an automatic. That's like breathing. So I understand the importance of a routine. I also, from time to time, find myself consumed by a project or something which doesn't allow my mind to free up of the energy, the mental energy that I have to expend on it. And I do, from time to time, have to get better at that. So
hyper-focused
on something. It's churning and churning and churning and churning. And now it's 9:30 and I need to get to bed. And instead I can't get that out because I'm like working it and working it and working it. And that's where the routine comes in. Because if you have a good routine, you'll know that churn should start at a certain time. You get up at 6, by 6:30, you're having your cup of coffee, you're catching up with the world. And that churn of that idea should be able to come back to you, and you left it there when you put it in the drawer last night at 8:30. Sometimes I'm not capable of doing that, and it'll be 2 o'clock in the morning and it's still churning. That's probably my worst habit.
Great awareness. Rick, what's your remedio that you want to share?
So my mother, speaking of the Latino experience, when you have a Latino mother or Latino grandmother, they do this. So you're not feeling well, or you're feeling a little melancholy, or you got a little bit of a bellyache, and my mother would go in the backyard and she would cut yerba buena. Yerba buena means good grass. I don't know what the hell it was. Could have been grass pot for all I know. I don't know. But she would then, and I'd see, she was like, my brother and I would look at each other and go, there she goes again. She's going to go pull some weeds. She would go in the backyard. She would pull some weeds. She'd bring it in the house. She'd make a pot of water with just amount for making a cup. She'd put it in there. She would boil it. And then she'd pour it and make us drink it. And I don't know what the hell it is, but somehow everything was soon right again with the world.
You know, when is peppermint, no?
I have no idea what it was. To this day, I have no idea what it was.
But
and all I know, it was good grass. Yerba buena, it was good grass. I don't know if she was particularly picking mint or she was just picking un cocimiento de una cosa que yo no sé. But maybe you're right. Is it mint? That my guys here, my crew here is saying that. Obviously, everybody here is Latino, so everybody's saying their mothers did the same thing, and it was usually right. Mint. So yeah, I guess mint. Typically. There you go. Because to this day, whenever I have something hot, it makes me feel good.
Tecitos are like the best. What's your quote or mantra that you live by?
Perseverance.
Where can we find you? Give us all the places, spaces, links.
Go right now to aguamedia.com, aguamedia.com, agua, like water. And my podcast is called Rick Sanchez News. Rick Sanchez News is a podcast that I do where I like to tell Latino truths and say the things that I think need to be said to lift our community and to call out those who don't understand us. So Rick Sanchez News is my podcast. Agua Media is our company. We believe in the power of podcasts, and we are going to be developing many, many podcasts between now and the next several months in all kinds of areas. Check it out. Check it out. And you're wonderful, Pam. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have like 5 minutes to do some rapid fires?
Rapid fires. Yeah, what the heck? Let's do it.
What's the biggest success you're celebrating?
My granddaughter, who is brilliant and wonderful, and we love her. Now that I'm a granddad for the first time ever, I'm realizing the joy of it.
What's a lesson that you're still learning?
How to not allow myself to be so consumed with thoughts that have less to do with my happiness and more to do with my success.
Do you have an I made it moment?
Yes. When Cano Health went public as a $4.4 billion company, I thought to myself, I can't believe that this little dream we had 5 years ago has just transpired into this.
What is something you've been putting off for months?
Spending more time with my wife.
Vicks or Té de Manzanilla?
Without any question, Manzanilla.
Discipline or habits?
Habits.
Joy or peace?
Peace.
They didn't think I could blink, but I did.
That question captures my life. They didn't think I could succeed in school, but I did. They didn't think I could get a football scholarship, but I did. They didn't think I could become the first Latino to be a national news anchor in America, but I did. They didn't think I could come out of that firing and humiliation by CNN, but I did. They didn't think that I could create a $4.4 billion company without having a business degree, but I did.
Give me blank and I will blink.
Give me knowledge and I will follow you.
What is stopping you?
Old age.
What are you willing to fail over and over?
Love.
What is a talk you can do without prep?
Effective communication guidelines.
What are you creating today?
A world without silos.
What's the future?
One where we'll communicate better and bring about more peace.
If I was to give you $100, what would you do with them?
I'd give it to somebody who needs it more.
And what if I told you have to spend it on yourself?
I'd find a way to use it to gain new knowledge about something that I don't understand.
Awesome. Rick Sanchez, thank you for coming to Café con Pam. This was super fun.
Yeah, my pleasure, Pam. That was a lot of fun. That was interesting. You do a great podcast. That was, I could see where people would enjoy listening because it's highly personal and highly emotive. That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay shining.
Y bueno, listeners, that was my conversation with Rick. I really am curious to hear, to read you, to listen to what you have to say about this conversation. I think I have a lot more questions that I could have asked. I hear you there. I know you're probably like, ask more. And I did have a lot of questions to ask. We actually went over and Rick was really generous with his time and he gave us a little bit more time because he had to leave for the weekend. And so it's super fun. It's great for me to have conversations with people that is older than me. I don't know. I just enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you are new here, welcome to Café con Pam. I really hope you enjoyed this time that you gifted me in your ears. It's an honor that I get to spend an hour or so with you every week or whenever you listen to me. Maybe you binge me, you know, whatever number of hours we spend together. I really want you to know that I don't take it for granted. And if you feel called, if you felt moved in any way with this episode or maybe the third or fourth that you have listened to, this is my invitation for you to support the show. And a great way to do it is by leaving a review. The biggest platform where reviews are left for podcasts is Apple Podcasts. And I know 90% of you that listen to me on Apple Podcasts. So don't play. I know you'd be on that app. And if you would be so kind to drop the stars, ideally 5 stars, because our score has been going down. I don't know why. So if you have feedback, here's the thing. Here's my ask. If you have feedback, I would love to hear the feedback. Because when somebody leaves like 4 stars or 2 stars or whatever, then I wonder what made you do that. If you leave me a 5-star rating, then it's great. That tells me that I'm doing a great job to whatever your needs are. If you leave me a 4-star, then I'm curious. So my ask is if you're going to leave a rating that is 4 stars or less, I would love to know why, you know? And if you have 2 more minutes to leave a review, then I would so take that also. Now, the other platform that's been getting more and more ratings is Spotify. So if you listen on Spotify, which is the second highest, then the second highest platform that Café con Pam listeners use, then 5 stars there also are helpful. In Spotify, they don't let you leave reviews yet. It's only ratings. So it's only stars. And whichever additional platform you listen in, if they allow you to leave a rating, I so appreciate it and thank it. Thank you so much. For any of you who would like to leave a review, some questions that you want to ask yourself is, what do you love about the show? What were you expecting before you tuned in? And what happened after you tuned in? What was the transformation? I want to thank every single one of you who have left reviews recently. It's super fun to read them. And really, I so appreciate them. It makes my day when I read your reviews because they're super fun. And thank you for being here. Now, if you would like to stay connected further, outside of you listening to me week after week, I would love for you to follow me on social media at Café con Pan Podcast on both Instagram and Facebook. You can also join the Café con Pan Challenge. It's a free challenge that I have for you. Head over to cafeconpanchallenge.com. I would also love to stay connected in my Discord server. I'm in Web3, which it's a whole other conversation. StayShining.club. You have to only create an account. You can download the Discord app and it's super fun in there. And actually, this episode, I am recording in the past. I like transparency. So of course, I'm sharing all the things. So this episode is coming out 1 month from recording time. When you listen to this episode, send me a DM at Café con Pan Podcast. And I don't know. Tell me what's going on with you and be like, hey, did you know that you recorded this episode a month ago? What's changed since then? And maybe I'll give you an update. And I want to give a shout out to producer Nancy for her wedding. She is getting married. And the reason why we are recording these episodes such ahead of time is because she came to me and was like, Pam, I'm going to need 2 weeks because I'm getting married. And I was like, Nancy, you're going to take the whole month because there's no way. You're just not going to work the week of your wedding and the week after. Like, take the whole month because you deserve it. And because I don't want to be another stressor. So producer Nancy is currently enjoying the joys of being married. I think at this point she is already married. So it's super fun to record episodes for the future and the past. And so shout out to producer Nancy for making this happen and for being flexible. And it's been fun to record from the past to the future. So maybe when you send me a DM and you're like, hey, you recorded this in the past, you can tag me and wish producer Nancy a happy wedding bells or whatever you do when people get married. I don't know. Felicidades. Pero bueno, thank you so much, listeners, for being here today. It's so fun to hang out with you and myself and talking to this microphone, thinking that there's someone on the other side. It makes my day. That's why it makes my day when I read you, because I'm like, oh, it wasn't just me ranting at this microphone by myself. There's actually people on the other side. So I thank you so much for being here. Y como siempre, stay shining.